Hey everybody, this is Chris. I wanted to pop in before the intro music to give you a quick sort of disclaimer before we get to my interview with Maria Thomas. So as I've probably documented a couple of times here, and if you're following my personal life, that's cool. Hi. We got a puppy. His name is Miles Davis. At the time that I recorded this, he was still adjusting to the part where we weren't giving him constant attention. And by the end of this podcast, you can clearly hear him throughout. I did what I could to edit out communication to me during the portions of the podcast when I wasn't speaking, but there's some things you just can't avoid, like whenever I'm talking and he's yelping, you're going to hear him. I understand if it becomes sort of a thing that you want to tune out, but I invite you to try and power through because Maria had some really insightful things to share about her life with hyperhidrosis, and I learned a lot through it despite the fact that this dog was constantly demanding my attention by the end of the show. So again, apologies for ultimately the lack of professionalism. I did what I could to clean up the audio. Maria was a real trooper throughout the interview. I really appreciate her patience with me as I learned to adjust to podcasting with a dog in the family. So that's it for me. Again, apologies for this. Future episodes, this as far as I can tell so far, don't include as many dog interruptions, but such is life. Thanks again for listening, everybody.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine alone and do not necessarily reflect that of my employer. After all, we're just talking.
Episode of Just Talking. This is episode 468. I'm Chris, and this is the podcast week of October 2nd, 2018. Joining me this week, Maria Thomas. Maria, how's it going?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was just enjoying the fact that patient advocates sort of had a recurring revelation that patient advocates often have fantastic blog names and URLs. MyLifeAsAPuddle.com is very appropriate because we're going to talk about hyperhidrosis, which I didn't realize was a thing, which I'm sure you probably get a lot of.
Yes, I do.
But once I started to click around and read a little bit and kind of understand who you were and what you're all about, it's like that is the perfect blog title. And then I've been thinking about all the other patient advocates I've had on and how, you know, it's a very personal thing whenever you're going to share your story and talk about this thing that you're living with for the rest of your life. And if you want to make the right impression, that URL is the best place to start. So I guess the least important question that before we actually get started is, how long did it take for you to settle on that specific URL?
Probably just a couple of months. You know, right after I had a really good experience with the International Hyperhidrosis Society, about 2 months after that, I launched my blog. And so I kind of had to have something nailed down by then.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. Let's start at the beginning. And I apologize that this is going to be one of those things that you likely have to retell over and over, but let's see how quickly we can get through it before we get to the good parts. What is hyperhidrosis?
Hyperhidrosis is the medical term for excessive sweating. It typically affects people's hands and feet, but they can also have underarm sweating, craniofacial sweating, groin sweating, and all over body sweating.
So, like I said, I didn't realize this was a thing, and trying to figure out how to approach a conversation like this whenever, like, I understand that invisible illnesses are one thing. This is slightly visible-ish invisible. But because it is so uncommon, I guess more importantly, how rare is this disease as far as actual diagnoses are concerned, if not across the world, at least in the United States?
Sure. So I would say it's not rare, but it's rarely talked about. Okay. The statistic currently is that it affects 5% of the global population and about 15 million Americans.
You were going to say something. I apologize.
Most people don't know that it's a medical term, a recognized condition, because they're either too embarrassed or ashamed to talk about it or to ask their doctor, or they just think that it's kind of a freak thing and they're just the only ones dealing with it.
So this is like hardcore stigma creating additional problems down the road for people just trying to figure out, you know, if people want to live their lives, it's one thing, but then having something as awkward as excessive sweating, that's
it's got to be a lot for one person to wrap their head around just to understand that this is a medical condition, not just, you know, a Tuesday.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what was that sort of acceptance period, or I guess not acceptance, but understanding and ultimately leading to a diagnosis, like for you?
Well, I had always had sweaty hands and feet growing up. And then when I was about 13, I finally asked my mom, you know, why am I always so sweaty? And so she took me to our primary care physician and they gave me a prescription for Drysol, which is an antiperspirant. They told me to put it on my hands and feet at night and then wrap my hands and feet in Saran wrap. So that's not very practical. It's hard to sleep with your hands in plastic wrap. So that didn't work very well. The patient compliance aspect was pretty low for me. And then, you know, the older I got, the more research I started doing on my own. And so I just started Googling things. And then when I was about 21, I found out the term actually was called hyperhidrosis. And then when I was 30 years old, I volunteered as a patient and I got free Botox injections in my hands. And that was what really kind of got the ball rolling for me to launch my blog.
So that was going to be my follow-up question at some point in this chat is, what are treatment options like for this? I mean, obviously Saran wrap around your feet and hands isn't going to be a viable solution for you, but Botox solutions, how does that work?
So Botox, it basically disables the nerve communication, the nerve glands. So it partially paralyzes them so they don't trigger your body into sweating. So that's one treatment option. Most of the time it's not covered by insurance, so it can be very expensive. Mm. I got my Botox done because I volunteered as a patient, so it was at no cost to me. There are oral medications, anticholinergics like Robinol, glycopyrrolate is the generic name. There are over-the-counter clinical strength antiperspirants. There are prescription antiperspirants. And then the most drastic option when you've exhausted everything else is ETS surgery. And that stands for endoscopic thoracic sympathectomy. So that's where they go in through each armpit and they cauterize the nerves that trigger the sweating. So you have a chain of nerves in your rib, just behind your rib cage called the sympathetic nervous system. And each of those rungs in the ladder, if you will, correspond to a different area of sweating on your body. So they are able to isolate each of those nerves and then sever them. So that's a permanent surgery.
How far along down that treatment option path is Botox before that surgery is the only thing left?
If you look at it from a pyramid standpoint, I would say Botox is one or two steps below ETS. ETS is that you're at the top of the pyramid, you've exhausted all other options, and is this the right option for you? I personally will never have the surgery because the side effects can be worse than the original problem. Ooh. Many people develop compensatory sweating. So they go in for the surgery to treat their hands or their feet or their underarms, and then they develop compensatory sweating in their trunk. And I've met people in person who have had the ETS surgery and they're literally sweating through two layers of shirts.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Huh. It's pretty serious.
Yeah. So So I'm going to ask this. I don't mean to be insensitive, but I don't know how to phrase this in the moment right now without sounding like a jerk, but I'm trying not,
no
I'm trying
worries.
Not to be a jerk, but excessive sweating doesn't sound like the end of the world. I understand just from reading your blog that it can create a whole host of, weird complications and extra things you have to consider just from doing from existing day to day. But like in the grand scheme of all of medicine, which is an unfair comparison, excessive sweating, it has a lot to live up to as far as being taken seriously. I don't know what the question is there, but like there's something about like the challenges of getting people to take you seriously and take what you're experiencing seriously whenever.
I totally understand what you're saying.
Hey, it's not cancer. It's not, you know, these things that people can easily wrap their heads around. Excessive sweating.
Right.
You
know? Right. I mean, it's definitely not the worst thing that someone could have. But I would also say that it can be socially, professionally, and mentally debilitating. Mm. People can have problems with confidence. They can develop depression. And for me personally, hyperhidrosis can be a safety issue. So I also have ulcerative colitis and I am on a biologic medication. So I have to self-inject every other week. So if my hands are dripping with sweat and my hand slips off that syringe, I could lose a precious dose of life-saving medication. If I'm, say I'm a parent and I'm trying to hold my child's hand as we cross the street and my hand slips and the kid runs out into traffic, that's an issue. People avoid certain occupations because of their sweaty hands. Paramedics have a hard time putting, you know, the latex gloves on their hands. People avoid law enforcement professions because they can't properly grip a weapon. Things like that can really cause serious issues for people if they don't have access to treatment options or access to treatment options that work for them.
Yeah. So I'm going to apologize for the rest of this podcast. My puppy just woke up. I'm not sure if you can hear the squeaking of the raccoon toy that he has, but I'm still here.
Oh, yeah. I just heard it.
Yeah. It's like I said, he just woke up. So by the end of this podcast, I'm going to have to take him out to go do what he does outside. But again, my apologies for that. It's normally not as... Whatever. Pets are awesome. Yay.
Yeah, they are.
So I guess, I mean, I feel like that's the best way to sort of get people that want to understand but might have difficulties understanding how excessive sweating can be challenging is to put in the context of ordinary everyday activities and say, now imagine that, but now imagine, you know, like you said, driving, holding your kid's hand. If you, you know, have a job that requires some sort of dexterity, you know, imagine that, but, and then you sort of frame it in that context. Is that sort of the best path to generating some sort of awareness and understanding and hopefully down the road empathy?
Yeah, I think so. Just, and that's kind of what I tried to do with my blog is just tell those real life stories about situations that I've been in where my hyperhidrosis has gotten in the way or made me feel less than or like a freak.
Yeah, that's, it's just,
I have tons of examples where hyperhidrosis has gotten in the way, like, you know, on the professional side, again, like networking events are an absolute nightmare for me.
You shake hands left and right, right?
Yeah. You're shaking hands. So that's the first impression. So people think, oh, you know, she's got sweaty hands. She must be really nervous. And I'm not sweating because I'm nervous. I'm nervous because I'm sweating. And so sometimes I'll just use the trick with the cocktail glass. You know, you hold the glass with ice in it in your right hand, and then you switch it to your left hand before you go to shake someone else's hand. So then they think that your hand is wet from the glass and not from sweating.
There are like all these extra little social cues you have to be aware of because of just to, wow.
So yeah. Clothing choices, the types of shoes that I wear, stuff like that.
Yeah. It makes you just like extra aware of all these things. So it's not the exact same, but I feel like the only comparison I can make to not make this a competition, but in the grand scheme of things, I have type 1 diabetes. So does my wife. We both wear insulin pumps. As a guy, I have the luxury of pants that have actual pockets. As a woman, women's fashion is tremendously unfair in that if you have pockets, they're either too small or they're fake. So the fact that she found a dress shop online that actually will make dresses with pockets is a huge thing because that's a place to store her insulin pump. But like keying in on those sorts of like, you know, let's say like a societal norm that women's fashion is, but like understanding like what the rules are and then how you have to bend your current life with whatever your situation is, be it an insulin pump or excessive sweating, how you're going to wrap around to fit into that because, you know, society is not necessarily built for insulin pumps and sweaty palms.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here right now in my office and I've got a little like 4-inch desk fan. It's on the floor and it's pointed at my feet. And then I'm holding a kitchen towel in my hands because I'm sweating.
So when you travel or something like that, how much packing, how much of your suitcase is devoted to, those sorts of accommodations, towels or fans or things like that?
Most of the time I don't bring towels or a fan. Through the airport, I will always wear jeans because they're the most sweat friendly. So I can easily wipe my hands on my jeans. Mm-hmm. And then shoes, like I see people go through the airport security with flip flops or sandals on. I can't do that because I will literally slip and slide all over the floor. So I have to wear tennis shoes and socks.
This is blowing my mind.
Yeah. And like I was doing a Facebook Live video a couple of weeks ago at work. And so we were filming it outside and, you know, it's still summer, so it was hot. And so I didn't bring, like an idiot, of course, I didn't bring a towel or an extra sweater, and I didn't have sleeves on, so I couldn't wipe my hands on my sleeves. So the other girl that was there, she was nice enough to let me wipe my sweaty paws all over her coat that she had brought. So it's like, wow. You have to think ahead and, you know, bring those supplies if you know that you're going to be in a trigger situation.
Yeah. So there are two particular posts that I'd like to highlight as we sort of round out this conversation. Again, mylifeasapuddle.com. The first is titled Becoming Comfortable Enough to Talk About My Hyperhidrosis. This seems like a really familiar story, at least in my realm of, like, I guess in the broader scheme of patient advocacy, there's a certain point where awareness turns into action. And understanding, at least of your own self, and a willingness and a desire to do more beyond just kind of deal with it yourself. Can you just for my audience, sort of retell that story, and if you can describe what it was like to feel that sense of validation and then ultimately find that new defining purpose?
Yeah, I'm impressed you found that post because you had to do some digging. That's one of my earliest blog posts, so it looks like absolute crap. So I'm going to have to go and update that right after we hang up.
Your table of contents is well organized. It helped me out.
Okay, good. So the thing that helped me find my sweaty voice was going back to that patient volunteer experience. The International Hyperhidrosis Society put on a symposium for dermatologists in Denver. And so I was a patient volunteer, and I walked in there not knowing at all what to expect. And I met these people and I met these doctors, and they shook my hand and they didn't immediately wipe their hand off or shrink away in disgust. And I didn't have to apologize for who I was and the way that my body behaved. And so I left that symposium just feeling so empowered and just validated and relieved. You know, for once I could be exactly who I was and it was okay. And so I left there and I just thought, you know, I've always been a writer, and I work in communications and marketing now, so I'm constantly writing. And I left that symposium thinking, maybe people would want to hear about my story. Maybe I actually do have something to say about this. And so that's what propelled me to launch my blog.
Wow. I have to do something incredibly unprofessional. I need to take the puppy out real quick. Can you pause for like 5 minutes? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's totally
fine. I'm so sorry.
No worries. Right.
So that experience you just described about having those doctors not sort of recoil at the fact that you have sweaty palms, like that's a different kind of like the Me Too experience that I often describe for people with diabetes who first discover the online community and they realize that they're not alone. But that's like, it's a different kind of validation of who you are and what you're living with that doesn't necessarily equate to shame and fear and things like that. That's, I mean, I immediately understand how incredibly validating and rewarding that experience must have been for you.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, C.S. Lewis has a quote, something about friendship is born at that moment when one person discovers, you know, you too, I thought I was the only one. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's been happening with my blog. I've been able to connect with people all over the world, which has been really exciting.
What has that that specific experience been like as the blog continues to gain awareness? Because, I mean, it's, as I like to say, it's not about the page views, but I mean, at some point you have to recognize that you are gaining an audience, you are growing readership, and people are paying attention to what you have to say, and that does come with a good deal of responsibility. But what is that growth in your advocacy efforts been like for you?
The last couple of months, I've opened up my blog to accept other people's sweaty stories. And so the first one is from Jess. She's a 5-year-old in the United Kingdom. And her mom, Haley, follows me on Facebook. And she said that she took Jess in for iontophoresis treatments. That's actually a treatment that I forgot to mention. Iontophoresis is basically where you stick your hands or feet into a shallow tray of water and you run an electrical current through it. That also temporarily blocks the sweating glands. So little 5-year-old Jess, she had iontophoresis treatments done, and they went into it, her pediatric dermatologist to do this supervised, and it didn't work for her. But then she heard about me talking about Carpe lotion, which is an over-the-counter antiperspirant lotion for hands and feet. And Jess has had some really good success with that. So I asked her mom, you know, would you be willing to tell your and Jess's story? And she did. And so now my blog isn't just about me, and it was never just about me in the first place, but now I'm trying to take it to the next level and involve other people and make other people feel just as validated as I was.
What's the main piece of advice that you offer for people that are just discovering your blog and just discovering that there are other people living with hyperhidrosis?
I would say your best bet for treatment options, insurance questions, and clinical support is to visit the International Hyperhidrosis Society at sweathelp.org.
Okay.
And, you know, make sure that you do your research. Don't just go to, you know, the surgeon in Beverly Hills who's touting ETS surgery and it's going to cure everything. Some people, it does cure it and they have success, but the majority of people I've talked to have devastating side effects like that compensatory sweating. So make sure you do your own research and only you can decide what is best for you and your body. And different people react in different ways to all of these treatment options. So what works for one person may not work for another.
Hyperhidrosis sounds like a condition that is ripe for exploitation and snake oil salespeople. What's
yes.
the most insane, aside from the saran wrap on your hands, what's the most insane thing that somebody has said that would help you out?
I've heard drink a ton of sage tea. Don't drink or consume dairy, and don't drink water, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know, they think if you dehydrate yourself, then you won't have any liquid left in your body to sweat out. But that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Wait a second. That doesn't make any sense. Like, there's a whole bunch of other like random things that you could suggest, but the part where your body's getting rid of water, so don't give it water.
Yeah. If anything, drink more water because you're depleting your own water supply faster.
How much water do you drink?
Especially in the summertime. I try to drink like two of those large Nalgene size bottles, but that doesn't always happen. You know, but I'll drink like tea or iced tea in addition to water. So I'm still consuming liquids. It may not just be straight water.
Right on. So we're going to get into some of the other post I wanted to highlight is the hyperhidrosis. Is it a disability question that you posed? But before I get there, are there any long-term complications at play for untreated hyperhidrosis?
Not necessarily. I mean, there aren't, you know, if you don't treat it, you know, for your entire lifetime, it doesn't mean it's going to necessarily get worse. But at the same time, I also feel like my hyperhidrosis gets worse the older I get, only because I'm placed into more triggering situations like job interviews, public speaking, you know, professional networking events, things like that. You know, and it can be bad enough that people don't want to leave their house. You know, they become recluses because of this. And I really try my best not to let my hyperhidrosis get in the way. And so I'm constantly pushing myself to get out of my comfort zone.
So like I mentioned, this other blog post that you have, hyperhidrosis, is it a disability? This is something that I am keen to talk about, at least within the diabetes community, because there's one train of thought that is, I have diabetes. Diabetes does not have me. I can do whatever I want. You can, you know, be Nick Jonas. You can play professional sports. You can climb Mount Everest. You can do whatever. Diabetes is along for the ride. It's not a disability. But then as far as legal protections are concerned, yes, it is a disability. You shouldn't be afraid of that word, but there is still a stigma around that depending on who you talk to and what their perception is. For something like hyperhidrosis, given the challenges you're going to face just from society being society, what is that? How is, I guess initially, what was the response to this blog post and what are the conversations that you encounter within the hyperhidrosis community around defining this as an actual disability?
So it's interesting. I think it was earlier this year, AT&T actually recognized hyperhidrosis as a disability for their employees. So they are actually in the process of making accommodations for their employees. And that can be anything from letting them, you know, work in a cooler area of their office building, giving them a desk fan, covering their computer keyboard with plastic covering to, you know, prevent damage. So there are very simple accommodations that employers can make to help their employees perform at their highest level. But I think we still have a long way to go as far as getting it nationally recognized as a disability. But, you know, those certain occupational things that people may not enter, law enforcement, emergency medical technician, things like that, you know, engineering type degrees or people working in factories where they're having to use their hands, you know, in some kind of a assembly line thing, that can definitely affect their ability to perform.
As an advocate, is that a fight that you'd like to see somebody pose as far as their ability to do that kind of work with hyperhidrosis? Like, I understand, like, you know, from my perspective, there at least there are practical reasons why it would seem a little counterintuitive to, like, want to hold a gun and do, you know, police officer type things with a gun with, you know, excessive sweating as far as your hands are concerned. But also as far as getting hyperhidrosis recognized, like, the only way to do that is through legal action. Is that something that you'd actually like to see take place, even if you're not necessarily the person to lead that cause?
Yeah, I think that would definitely be a worthwhile effort to pursue. But I think more importantly, we need better treatment options. And that entails more and better clinical trials. I've tried to qualify for several clinical trials for underarm sweating. And, you know, everything is FDA regulated. They have to have, you know, the same procedure performed for each patient that they're trying to enroll. So they have to have, you know, repeatable, measurable outcomes. But at the same time, not everyone sweats at the same time. Hyperhidrosis is more episodic than it is constant. And so if you put me in an exam room and you leave me there for 30 minutes to get acclimated and I'm sitting there in a paper thin gown, I'm probably not going to be sweating because I'm going to be cold. But if you ask me to stand up in front of your entire medical office staff and give a speech, I'll be sweating then, you know, or put me on a stage and have me do some public speaking, I can guarantee I'll qualify then for a clinical trial.
But I guess that's something that an IRB isn't going to necessarily want to take into account, that sort of contextual sweating situation.
Right. So the other thing that needs to happen is, you know, patient-focused drug development meetings. And hyperhidrosis actually had its first one this past November in Washington, D.C. And I was happy to be a part of that. I was a panelist speaker during that day. So I got to tell my patient story to members of the FDA and Big Pharma to tell them what we need for clinical trials and research.
How do you wrap your head around getting psyched up for something like that? If there are only a handful of patients there, you're representing an entire community of people around the country. And it's not, obviously it's not just about your story, but in that moment, it is about your story.
Right. So the funny thing is, and I'm mostly an introvert, but I am so passionate about hyperhidrosis. And when I found my sweaty voice, I knew that this is what I was supposed to be doing. Like, I feel called to do this. I hate public speaking. I hate standing on stage and wearing a nice dress because I'm going to sweat through it. But I am willing to do whatever it takes to increase hyperhidrosis hope and awareness one drop at a time. So that's the crazy thing. Like, I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
I guess you have to kind of psych yourself up by knowing that there are all these people that are also depending on you for your advocacy efforts. I mean, they're hoping that you're willing to sacrifice that dress, or at least they're hoping that you're willing to pay that dry cleaning bill. Yeah. At the end of the day, the greater good is at stake.
Right.
Huh. That's a really specific kind of pressure that I guess I'm just fortunate enough that I know other people that are much more eloquent than I am when it comes to diabetes advocacy, so that my story, whenever it is important, it's important on a much smaller scale as opposed to what the FDA has to, or FDA is asking about as far as diabetes is concerned. But yeah.
Right. Huh.
So when did you ultimately realize that these kind of opportunities were sort of your future as a patient advocate? Like, it's one thing to write for a blog and to get recognition that way, but like getting that kind of awareness and that kind of respect ultimately to be asked to speak and represent your community. Like, when did you first realize that that sort of visibility was what you were, I mean, those are the circles that you're operating in now.
So my blog has been kind of a side hustle for me for the last 7 years, but the last really year and a half was when things really took off for me. Last year, I was selected as one of just 50 people nationwide as an Oprah Magazine insider. So I was a brand ambassador for Oprah Magazine for a year. And so that really gave me the confidence boost to be able to pitch myself to companies and organizations and ask to work with them. And so now I was in the hyperhidrosis PFDD meeting. I'm doing some work with Carpe Lotion for excessive sweating. I have a conference call tomorrow to do a video hyperhidrosis CME topic. So some continuing education stuff. I'm really learning how to leverage social media and become a brand ambassador for companies and treatments that I believe in.
Did you get to meet Oprah?
No, I tried so hard, but no. So that's still on my bucket list, unfortunately, but that's okay.
What kind of cachet does that add to your sort of your resume? It's not like, in the world of Do You Know Who I Am? Like, how far does the O Magazine thing get you?
That remains to be seen. It's definitely something that is now on my resume. They have a section on their website, omaginsider.com, that's dedicated to showcasing each of the insiders. And I've met some really wonderful people through it. And I'm actually headed out to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho on Sunday for Social Media Week. And that's being put on by one of my fellow OMAG insiders. So I've made some great connections with other people. One of them is a photographer, so she's helping me with some headshots. Another does the whole social media brand ambassador thing worldwide. So I know I'm going to get some great tips from her as far as how to pitch brands and things like that.
Okay. Right on. Wow. I feel like we might have kind of touched on this, but I'll make sure I can explicitly ask it because this has got to be something that you talk about often. What is the biggest misconception that you have to sort of deal with or dispel when it comes to hyperhidrosis?
That people think because we're sweating that we're automatically nervous or we're not confident. And while that can be true, you know, it can definitely affect your confidence. That's not the first thing that should come to mind. You know, we are more than our hyperhidrosis. So I think just, you know, being able to educate people don't be afraid to talk about it. You know, it's not your fault that you were born this way, but you don't have to let it define you.
I like that. That's really nice.
Thank you.
That's, that covers all the high level bullet points. And I feel like, admittedly, I am rushing a little bit because, as you can hear, this dog is demanding my attention, but I do want to make sure that I give you the opportunity to share anything else that you think is valuable for my audience to recognize and to understand about this. Because like I said, this is something that I didn't know about until 37 minutes ago or 42 minutes ago, whenever I first pulled up your blog to learn about who you were and what you're all about. But like, I mean, there's, you know, a half hour is never going to be enough time to do anybody justice when it comes to telling their story about any sort of health condition. But when it comes to this, like, is there anything else that you'd like people to know?
I would say doing your research first and foremost. There's a lot of Facebook groups for hyperhidrosis, which is great because it is bringing people together, but there can also be a lot of bad information and non-medically advised information in there. So just make sure that you're doing your research and don't be afraid to seek help. You know, there are people and patients and organizations out there who have answers to the questions that you might be asking, even if you're only asking them silently in your head.
I like that. All right. MyLifeAsAPuddle.com is the blog URL. That'll be the primary place that I'll be sending people from my show notes. Is there anything else you'd like to plug before we get out of here?
We're both members of Clara Health's Breakthrough Crew, and we actually met virtually through the WeGo Health Patient Leader Network. So those are another two great organizations that really give patients power.
I forgot that you can see me, so you see that I've got that shirt on right now.
Yeah, I noticed your shirt.
it is quite comfy, I must admit.
Yes.
Awesome. So yeah, I'll definitely include a link. I'll actually include a link to both the WeGo Health Network and the Clara Health Patients.
Awesome.
The Breakthrough Crew for people that want to learn more about clinical trials and how they can help spread the word about that, as well as puppies that demand more attention. For me, feedback at justtalkingpodcast.com. If you have any feedback for this, anything else you've listened to, or if you want to find out what my puppy looks like, his name is Miles Davis. This is not smooth jazz though. Justtalkingpodcast.com is the blog URL. Links in the show notes will include Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. If you'd like to subscribe and check out past episodes that don't include the puppy yelling at me, as well as mylifeasapuddle.com. Maria, thank you so much for taking time to share your story with me on this podcast. Again, I apologize for the dog, but whenever he's asleep, he's really cute for whatever it's worth. thank you again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Chris.
And on that note, this is episode 468 of Just Talking in the Books. I'm Chris, we'll see you in the week.